This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, it is hard to believe we are already in hour two at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. If you're just joining us, it's a big day, right? We got college football. It is week five. Lots of big matchups. Alabama will face Arkansas. You got Oklahoma at TCU in Fort Worth, LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M at Mississippi State. But right now, our focus to kick off hour two is going to continue in the NFL. My producer, Sean Mapes, with me. And Sean, there's so many compelling and fascinating matchups this weekend, but I think one in particular, an early season game that is going to be a lot of fun to watch, and that is the Cardinals and the Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely. Both teams 1-2 in this matchup as they head to Carolina to play this one. And they both really need a win because going 1-3 for both these teams, your season's not going to end the way you wanted it to when you start 1-3. I mean, with Matt Rhule, it seems like every week coaching for his job.
So they just, true.
They just got a win against New Orleans, so maybe it's cooled off just a little bit. But again, when you go 1-3, now it's like, oh my God, like the hill to get up to making the playoffs so steep. And then, of course, the Cardinals, all the expectations that group has had, signing Kyler Murray to that new contract. They have all the weapons for him, but they just haven't really clicked so far. So, yeah, a great a very good Carolina defense going up against that offense. That's really where the game is going to be decided, and that's the most interesting part of the game to me.
Well, I think one of the most interesting parts of the game is the Sooner sensations. Hey, we got that pipeline going on to the NFL, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. I mean, that's obviously very cool.
Yeah, obviously the back-to-back Heisman winners that that Lincoln Riley produced there facing off. It is very interesting also the way these guys kind of were perceived at the time and how their careers have gone, where, I mean, Baker Mayfield felt like so much more of like, yeah, he'll be definitely a very good pro, and now he's already on a second team, kind of having to prove it that he can hang around the league, and Kyler Murray just got a $200 million contract, and there's, you know, will he play baseball? Is he too short? Is he too small? And he's performed just fine, and again, just got that contract extension, so it's very interesting. Maybe the Sooners could have used him against Kansas State, but...
oh, that was a heartbreaker.
That was a little bit
of a
cheap shot.
I got to take care of business against TCU.
A little
today.
Bit of a cheap shot. We'll see how the Sooners respond with that. But yeah, the quarterback matchup, definitely interesting.
Hey, we got you ready for week four in the NFL. But right now, we're going to do a hard crossover. We're going to talk some LPGA news and notes. Former LPGA player Sissy Gallagher is coming up next here in hour two at Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, we are back with you on this Saturday, Sports Map Radio Network. We roll on the Big E Sports Show. Got to hear from you. Would love to connect with our audience across the country. Live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, and perhaps you missed maybe hour one. We make it so easy. Go to podcastarena.com. You can always email the show, info@eradiosports.com. Download our app. Take us anywhere, anytime. And that's right, mark it down. New time slot, Saturdays, 1 to 3 Eastern. Indeed, it is week five of the college football season. So many fascinating matchups that we've got our eye on, and we're highlighting a number of the games. But right now, in hour two, we're going to power down just a bit. We're going to take time for a book review, and all I can say is it's one of the best that I've ever featured on my show. The title of the book is The Idealist, Jack Trice and the Battle for a Forgotten Football Legacy. He is back, and that is the author, Dr. Jonathan Gelber. He's a sports medicine surgeon, but he also is an author. And Jonathan, it's been several years since we had you on the program. Good to have you back, and I trust all is well with you and your family.
Yeah, things are going well. Thanks for asking. Yeah, last time I was here, we talked about my book, Tiger Woods is Back and Tommy John's Elbow. And it's actually while researching that book is how I came across Jack Trice's story. And I just wanted to dedicate a whole book to Jack. And so that's what brought me to the book that just came out.
You know, I was going to say, what was the inspiration of Jack Trice's story? Because it's one that I think every college football fan should know. I mean, it's an essential story. And what an enduring legacy.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, Jack Trice is a story that once mm-hmm. people know about it, they wonder why they haven't heard of it before. And all the folks that have written reviews for my book, especially, you know, bigger name athletes, players, coaches, they all really want Jack's story told on a national stage. And it's really a story I think that a lot of people can identify with. And that's why so many people from different walks of life have basically become Jack's champion and tried so long and so hard to get the stadium named after him at Iowa State.
Well, Jack Trice, a trailblazer in college football, an impactful young man. I have to wonder, a lot of people, like you said, we don't know his story, but is this the first book ever released on this extraordinary man?
So fortunately, there are other folks, some scholars who have written papers, and mm-hmm. another gentleman by the name of Stephen Jones wrote a shorter book focusing on Jack's life. And what a lot of people have focused on was Jack's letter. And so the story with Jack is he was the son of a Buffalo soldier, and his grandparents were slaves. So he really was born the dawn of America as we know it. And so Jack's father died, and he was being raised by a single mom. And she sent him to live in Cleveland with his relatives, and that's where Jack became a star football player. And he was recruited to Iowa State along with his teammates and their coach from high school. And they all moved to Ames, Iowa. And so before Jack's big game, his big varsity game, he sat down alone in a hotel room. And he wasn't able to stay with his teammates because of the color of his skin. And so he was alone, he was isolated, and he had some thoughts. And so he wrote these thoughts down in a letter. And in that letter, he says, just before my big varsity football game, I know that the honor of my race, my family, and myself are at stake. And he goes on to talk about how he's going to do big things. And so Jack folded that letter up, and he put it in his pocket, and he put it into a coat. And he unfortunately suffered several injuries while playing against the University of Minnesota, and he died several days later from these on-field injuries. And that letter was discovered in his coat pocket before the funeral, and it was read at the funeral. Classes were canceled. Everybody came to mourn Jack, and so he put that letter, the words of those letters, in a plaque. And what's interesting and why this story is different than other stories is that we talk about the second half of the story. So really, Jack's story is two parts, that part mm-hmm. where he lives and passes away, and the second part where his words are discovered on a plaque by an English class, and the English class makes a project to learn more about Jack Trice, and it just happens to coincide with when Iowa State's building a new stadium. And so they wanted to name the stadium for Jack Trice, so they got together a student movement, and for 25 years, the students kept bringing this back up, kept bringing it back up, kept going to the administration, kept going to the regents, until finally, after about 25 years, the stadium was named for Jack Trice, and it was and still is the only major college football stadium named for an African-American.
Dr. Jonathan Gelber is our very special guest. He is an author of the brand new book, The Idealist, Jack Trice and the Battle for a Forgotten Football Legacy. Why was this such a long hidden story? I mean, this is what the first full length biography that you provide, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's a really good question because, you know, we know stories like Rudy, you know, he's on the big screen, you know, hear about, you know, the Gipper. And in fact, there was a columnist named Don Call, who was a witty sports writer, and he often would promote Jack's story, and he would compare it to things like, you know, win one for the Gipper and all these, you know, manufactured stories. And yet here in Ames, Iowa, they had a true story of a hero who sacrificed himself. And so I think that, you know, is what drew people to the story, is this idea of sacrifice, but also the weight of one's race, the weight of one's family, the weight of doing great mm-hmm. things. And so, you know, once people know about it, I think they really understand it, and they understand why everybody should know about the story. But it's just been hidden for so long in plain sight. Even the name Jack Trice Stadium, people know the name in Iowa of Jack Trice Stadium, but not many people know who Jack Trice actually was.
He's an author. Also, he's a sports medicine surgeon. Dr. Jonathan Gelber is our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show, shining the spotlight on his latest release. It is a must read. You can go anywhere online, triumphbooks.com, triumphbooks.com. It is titled The Idealist, Jack Trice and the Battle for a Forgotten Football Legacy. I mentioned, Jonathan, this is your second book that you've released. How difficult was this project, for you? I mean, it seems like it'd be a bit of a daunting task to reconstruct the life of Jack Trice. And who aided you? Who helped you through this? Because you want to get this right. I mean, this was such an extraordinary individual that went through so much.
Yeah, because he died tragically so young,
he's only 21.
Materials. Yeah. And so a lot of it was some of the work that had been done before by the authors and by the Jack Trice Committee. They had actually gone out and interviewed people, and those interviews are available in archives at Iowa State's Special Collections. There were many, many librarians from across the country, because Jack lived in Cleveland. He played in Washington State. He moved to Iowa. So librarians were an invaluable resource in providing newspaper clippings. Yearbooks helped a lot. And even going back to trace Jack's roots, things like Ancestry.com, you can actually get slave census names. And you can actually track Jack's parents and his grandparents and where they lived as slaves and who owned them and how they moved from one part of the country to another. So it took a lot of detective work, but we were able to piece together a lot of his story.
Jonathan, what do you personally learn from just this whole experience and, just chronicling, doing all your research? I mean, how did this impact you? I mean, I was very deeply moved after reading this story.
Yeah, I mean, what surprised me the most was how a lot of the themes just are still present today. I mean, there's a lot of things that are covered in the book that are directly related to Jack, but also things that are happening around the campus at the time, political movements, talks about cancel culture, talking about, African-American athletes being recognized, single mothers raising children. These are all things that are still being talked about today. And if you looked at Jack and you just heard his story, and you saw his smile and you said, this is a young man of color. His father died while he's young. He's moved from a metropolitan city in Cleveland to the middle of America to play football, to get a better education so he can go back and teach other people how to better themselves. You would say that's what happens today in college football. And yet this was 100 years ago.
Jonathan, a moment ago you were talking about the Trice Legacy Foundation. Where can we find out more about that? And tell us about the foundation.
Yeah, so there's actually a cousin of Jack. His name is George, and he, along with Iowa State, have been trying to come up with a scholarship fund. And so I know some of the alumni at Iowa State are working with the Trice Foundation to create a scholarship for young men or young women to attend college. So that's something that I think is really important, and I would like to draw attention to them. So if they look up Jack Trice Foundation online and George Trice, they'll be able to see that foundation and possibly contribute in some manner.
And of course, you can go anywhere online. We want to direct you to triumphbooks.com. The title of this particular book is The Idealist, Jack Trice and the Battle for a Forgotten Football Legacy. My final question for you, Jonathan, what kind of feedback have you received?
Yeah, I think the feedback is very much a positive one. And it's often, how can I promote this mm-hmm. story? Like, how can I help you tell this story or tell Jack's story? Because everyone agrees, as I mentioned before, it's a story that everybody should know. It's an inspirational story, a story of family, friendship, honoring somebody. And I think we really just want to promote the story. So not only Ames, Iowa knows it, but the entire nation, because it truly is, as you mentioned, an essential story.
Sports medicine surgeon, he is an author, Dr. Jonathan Gelber, our very special guest. Of course, again, go anywhere online, The Idealist, Jack Trice, and the Battle for a Forgotten Football Legacy. You keep producing all these amazing books, and Jonathan, we'll have another conversation when the holidays roll around. You take care. Enjoy the game today.
Thank you. Enjoy your weekend.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are so glad you're with us. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You bet, you're in Hour 2, the college football conversation. will continue in week five, but right now we're going to go inside the ropes. We are so thrilled to have the opportunity to visit with a woman of inspiration. She is a former LPGA tour player. In 2019, she was inducted into the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame. She is wife and she's a mom to a wife to five-time winner on the PGA Tour. He was on our program in the month of September. That is Jim Gallagher. And we are so delighted to open up the phone line and welcome in the great Cissy Gallagher. First time on the show. Hello, Cissy.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, you are so amazing, and I'm really excited to have you on the program just to kind of celebrate all that you have accomplished. And what an incredible ride it has been for you. But I want to lead things off with congratulating you on just another big win. I mean, the winning ways continue. You picked up some more hardware and defended your title at the 2022 Women's Senior Amateur. You finished 2-under in Cleveland Country Club, at Cleveland Country Club, I should say, and that's in Cleveland, Mississippi. So how'd you do it?
It was a great couple of days, and there's a little advantage when you grow up in the Mississippi Delta to play one of those golf courses right there with those little push-up greens and little tight fairways. So I had a little home course knowledge, but it was a wonderful couple of days with a lot of friends there that I've played in front of a lot, and it was a lot of fun.
You know, I mentioned that your husband, Jim, was on our program just a few weeks back, and we're a big fan of his work on the Golf Channel. And he was so proud of you. I mean, he highlighted, talked about your Hall of Fame career and how you have been so instrumental and just the key to his success. And so I'm like, we've got an extended invitation. We've got to have Cissy on the program. And I just want to brag on you. Like, you played in 3 NC2A national championships. And that was at LSU. Finished 14th in 1988. And then you secured your professional status on the LPGA Tour in 1990. You're a champion. I mean, you're an incredible competitor.
Well, thank you.
So what's your secret sauce? I mean, what's the key to your success?
You know, I grew up and playing just everything, every sport I could, you know, enjoy.
You did.
But golf grabbed me. My dad was a Mississippi State amateur champion, and I didn't realize till Jim and I had 3 children, I often wondered, you know, how did I manage? People would ask me all the time, how did you manage to become that good of a player? And I realized that after our 3rd child that my dad had to take us. If he wanted to play, my mom,
on
the weekends was like, she's going with you. So my dad never hesitated to drag us along. And I have some wonderful memories of lots of golf with my older brother and my dad and his friends. And it was wonderful. And so probably that passion for that and the time together as a family, that was probably the most instrumental thing to me. You know, learning to play and just him being such a good player made it that much easier.
A family of champions. You're the daughter, as you just mentioned, the former pro golfer, Ed Meeks, and golf obviously is in your genes. But how old were you when your dad put a golf club in your hand?
Oh, probably 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
So I loved it right off the bat, and maybe played my first girls event. We had a wonderful pro at our club, which so many clubs have great, you know, professionals at their club. And I remember winning the state junior when I was 13, the girls state junior, and the pro walked out, and I loved him so much. It was so great to me, being the only little girl that played. And he gave me a USGA entry, and I signed up for the U.S. girls, and I got in. And so got to play in my first national tournament.
Wow.
So that I would have never even known to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of opportunity like that that I probably, just like any career, you look back and you see some things that happened that were so instrumental that, you know, they're unexplainable.
Former LPGA pro Cissy Gallagher is joining us for the first time on Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. If you want to chime in on the conversation, you can join us live on social media at E Radio Sports. Cissy, you share, you know, just the influence that your dad had on you with the game of golf. Certainly lots of wonderful memories on the course with you and your brother, but you got to share what I just love about this. You played high school golf on the boys' team. Is that correct?
I did, and back then we used to have to play from the men's tees, which they do a 10% increase for the girls now, but back then we did, and it was a battle. It was hard for me, and clubs were different. Technology was different, but nobody was pulling harder for me than my brother and his buddies. So they were great to me, and it was a lot of fun. I think we won a state championship, high school state championship in 1980, maybe my freshman year of high school, and it was a blast.
Well, you won a state championship with your brother, and your score counted. I mean, that's huge.
Right. That's right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's so great. Fun. You know, I grew up playing Little League Baseball with my brothers. And as I look back and reflect over my life, that's probably one of my most special memories. I love the game of basketball, but playing, just the pride, you know, to be on the team. I was the only girl on the team with the guys. I mean, it was really special.
Oh, for sure. For sure. They're great. They were great to me. And that probably just, you know, looking forward to one day maybe playing the LPGA, that was certainly a goal of mine. And I managed to do that, and but it's still just accomplishing that, and a lot of it had to do with having to battle with those guys young, you know.
Yeah. So, what advice would you give to the parents that are tuning in? What is the best way to introduce your child to the game of golf? And you got to make it fun.
You really do have to make it fun, and golf can be kind of lonely. It's a, you know, it's a
solitude.
It's you're on your own, and. And there's a lot of time where you have to just figure it out yourself. And I loved a team sport, and it was so fun. I love people. And so golf was different for me. And but it was still, I think it's hard to make anybody passionate about anything. It's impossible, actually. And but for us, even for Jim and I as parents, we wouldn't let them stay. If they were begging to play another hole, we would usually be like, okay, that's it. We're going to head in. I hate that. We've got to go. Instead of saying, let's play one more. Let's play. We leaned on the side of, all right, that's enough. Let's go. So, just to try to, cause it's easy. It was easy for us. We both loved to play, and it was easy for us to stay out there sometimes too long, and we realized it and started kind of taking another approach. So
you're listening to Voice Cissy Gallagher, former LPGA player, joining us at Sports Map Radio Network. She is the wife of five-time winner on the PGA Tour, a member of the 93 Ryder Cup, the 94 President's Cup, and you know what? He won on both of those teams. And you're speaking about love, passion for the game of golf, but the love of your life, Jim Gallagher, when did you guys meet, and how did you know he was the one? I'm a sucker for a love story, so come on, Cissy.
Oh, that's so sweet. You know, I met his sister, his younger sister, at a USGA girls event out in Seattle. And that was before cell phones and all that stuff. And we kind of pen-palled back and forth. And she was going to the University of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already committed to LSU. And she rolled her ankle in a golf cart accident in Austin, Texas.
Wow.
And Florida, you know, pulled that scholarship because she had torn her Achilles. And she happened to be right there at Texas Children's Hospital, and they did a phenomenal job on her ankle. And I got a letter from her my freshman year at LSU that said, I just won the high school state championship in a boot. And I couldn't believe it, so she had to walk and carry her bag. And I actually told my coach that Florida had kind of pulled that scholarship back, and that Jackie was, and everybody wanted her. She was such a great player. So my coach called her, Karen Bonson. She called her and invited her to come to LSU, and she committed. And I didn't know Jim or my other brother-in-law, Jeff, at all. I didn't even know she had two older brothers.
Wow.
But I met Jim through Jackie, him traveling to watch us play some with his parents. And we got married right after I graduated from college. So,
and you have how many children?
We have four children, three daughters, and a son.
And go ahead. I was going to say. And
no, he's number two. He's number two in the order. So, yeah, poor guy.
And the golf, you know, legacy continues. So we're running out of time. But quickly talk about as far as like your daughters playing golf, too.
Oh, it was wonderful to get a chance to compete with them. My oldest two daughters have both won two state champions, state amateurs in Mississippi, and those four state ams that they've won probably mean more to me than any of mine. Just watching them do that was amazing, and just to watch them develop like that, and then to go on and play Division I, SEC, you know, college golf, there's not much sweeter than getting a chance to watch your children do something that you love and enjoy and do it really well.
Yeah, and helping them achieve their goals. Listen, we are up against the clock. I promise we're going to extend this invitation again real soon. Send our very best to your husband, Jim Gallagher, and just continued success. You're an amazing role model, mom, wife, and just keep doing your thing, Sissy.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome in. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, and another edition of the Big E Sports Show. Mark it down. We've got a brand new time slot. Saturdays, 1 to 3 Eastern, exclusively at Sports Map Radio. You can dial us in for the latest sporting news, rumors, analysis, and take our app anywhere, 24-7 Sports Map Radio. We are always ready to talk some PGA news and notes, but we're going to step back, look in the rearview mirror, and review the 2022 President's Cup after 3 long years of anticipation. There was a lot of hype about this, that it was going to be a David and Goliath showdown. Here to help us break it all down, he joins us each and every week, and that is former PGA pro. You can check him out online at LarryMillerGolf.com.
Yeah, good afternoon. It sure is. So the clock went right past 12. We didn't even notice it.
Well, we are
anyway,
all across the country.
Nice cool golfing weather for everybody right now. I'll tell you, everybody's walking around here saying, it's freezing out here. Where's my windbreaker? Because it's not 98 anymore. It's only in the 70s, and so it feels wonderful. So it's great golfing weather.
Listen, let's take time and to kind of recap how things played out for the President's Cup. Certainly, there was a lot of anticipation between the international team and the United States, but it wound up much closer than expected. So your thoughts on the strong performance from the international team?
Well, you know, if you get two groups of world-class players together playing a match, you know, they can you can say David and Goliath, but listen, they're all world-class players. And, you know, over 18 holes in a whether it's alternate shot or best ball or individual, anything can happen over 18 holes. It's you know, this, I don't care how heavily favored one is over the other, it's not going to always turn out that way by any means because they're all great players. And it's just who plays well that day. So I think the hype about David and Goliath, I think it was overdone a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that on paper, you know, if you strictly go by rankings, world rankings, then you could make the argument that the U.S. is heavily favored. But as I said, you know, when you're playing 18-hole matches in any format whatsoever, anything can happen, and especially when you have all good players. And so it's not a surprise to me that it was a little closer than expected. Although I will say this, I do think that, you know, if they played that same group of players 10 times in that format, I think the U.S. would probably win, you know, 7 or 8 times. I think there's a few more really great players than on the other side. And so, but still, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise at all. Listen, Tiger Woods in the match play championship, world match play,
mm-hmm.
Nick O'Hearn, who was ranked, higher than 250th in the world, he beat Tiger Woods twice in the match play championship. You know, so, I mean, that's almost like a 2 handicap of beating Tiger Woods, you know. But it can happen over 18 holes. And so anything can happen. It's exciting. But I'll tell you the truth. I put more weight on the Ryder Cup than the President's Cup.
Yeah.
I know it's been 3 years and everybody was looking forward to the team matchup. But to me, the Ryder Cup is much more, I put more weight on the Ryder Cup, and I think it's more exciting. It's more of a rivalry, more of a true rivalry, and it's a longer running event and more traditional. And so that's the one that I really look forward to. But anyway, President's Cup over and done with, U.S. keeps it, And that's the way it should be.
He's back and joins us each and every week, former PGA pro and author Larry Miller at Sports Map Radio Network. And, you know, when we talk about the President's Cup, a lot of pressure for both sides over those 4 days. I want to start off talking about just Captain Trevor Immelman. I thought he did an amazing job leading the international team. His guys were ready.
Trevor is a really class individual. He should be captain every time. I mean, the guy is just so good. He's been a great player. So he knows the players' games inside and out. His demeanor has to be a tremendous influence on that team. He's so calm and so level-headed and so logical in his thinking. I think that he does an incredible job, as a captain. And like I said, I'd like him to be captain all the time if I were running the thing. But yeah, he did a fabulous job with those players. He kept them confident too.
Yes.
You know, he kept them very confident and let them know that they can win this thing, you know, that they can match up. And I think that carried over to the play. And I think it contributed somewhat to it being closer than expected.
Okay, so we highlight the international team and Captain Trevor Immelman, but your assessment of the job that Captain Davis Love III did to make sure these guys played together, they were cohesive, and my assessment, they just had incredible unity.
What an easy job that is to captain the U.S. team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how'd you like to go and captain those guys? You know, all you have to do is say, hey, here's the first tee, you know,
Yeah. There's
the first green, go hit it. But no, he's another one, you know, another class guy that brings steadiness and consistency to everything that they do, the way they go about it. And, and it's hard to match up all those different egos. And that's the tough job of a captain, is to try to get the different egos to match up and sync up and play as a team. Because, golf being an individual sport, all of a sudden, when you shift over to team play, sometimes it's hard to make that adjustment. But that's another thing the captain is good at. And so Davis Love, just like Trevor Immelman, does a great job with that, too.
It was an action-packed weekend, a lot of significant moments. Are you a big fan of team competition? You were just talking about the Ryder Cup. But as far as, since we're recapping the President's Cup, what do you appreciate about it the most?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I like it a couple of times a year. I wouldn't like a steady dose of it, because golf is always has been an individual game and sport. I mean, you're on an island out there on the course, and all of a sudden now you've got teammates. So I think it's very interesting to see the novelty of it and all of a sudden how the players can adjust to that. That's the interesting part, is how these top five players in the world who 50 weeks of the year, are thinking individually, all of a sudden are thrust into a team atmosphere and to see how they deal with that. That's the interesting part. So, yeah, I'm a fan of it a couple of times a year, just like I'm a fan of the Phoenix tournament once a year with the circuit.
Oh, that's right. Hey, Larry Miller with us at Sports Map Radio Network. If you are just tuning in and joining us, chime in on the conversation. We are always live on Twitter at @eRadioSports. We are Inside the Ropes with Larry Miller. And, I definitely want to shine the spotlight on Jordan Spieth. He was 5-0 on the week, and four of those wins came alongside Justin Thomas. I thought he showed incredible leadership and maturity and helped bring everybody together as well.
Jordan Spieth is he's a throwback, in golf. He's a hybrid. He's a mix of the new modern scientific technology guy, but then he's the artist, that has been kind of disappeared from the game to a great extent. A lot of these young players, they just hit it high and far and straight, and there's not a lot of creativity like there used to be, in years past, where players worked the ball more, left, right, right to left, and low and high. And the game has become a distance game, and just hit it high, far, and straight, and you're going to score well. But Jordan Spieth is kind of a throwback. He's a mix. He can hit it high and long and straight. He can also work the ball all over the place. You put him in the woods, and he's more dangerous than he is from the fairway, because he's so creative, and he's a real artist in the game. And I think I think sometimes that works against him, because it's almost as if he doesn't know whether to be technical or be creative. What a super player he is, and what a creative player in the imagination. You know what I call it? I call it imagination with hands. And that's what golf is, when you can move the ball around at will around the golf course, curve it and shape it. And it's like imagination with hands. It's very creative. It's fun to watch Jordan play. And it's also fun to watch the banter with the caddy, Michael, back and forth to listen to that. So interesting guy, great player, and yes, great leader, and one that I think inspires the whole team.
And it's been fascinating to watch just how he's gotten his game back. What has changed?
Well, he's driving the ball better. His short game is back to where it was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, when it was so good when he won those majors. And I think the missing link, for a while there was the number of fairways that he hit. And I think now that he's hitting more fairways, he's able to engage that imagination more and get these approach shots in closer to the hole. And then he's putting great too. So, I think the work that he's done, and obviously it's been a lot, that is finally starting to pay off. And I think he's poised for a big year this coming year.
And I was going to say, what are your expectations for him since a brand new season is now underway?
I would expect at least one major out of him this year, the way he's playing.
Okay.
And I think that might come, it could possibly come at the British Open or the Masters, because both courses do require, creativity and imagination to play around that place. It's not so much just bang it out there, and straight and long. So I think now the U.S. Open could be a problem for Jordan because of the driver. Even though he's driving it a lot better than he was, he's still missing a number of fairways. And at U.S. Opens, as the rough there, on those U.S. Open courses is extremely severe. And so there's a premium on hitting the fairways. And so if he's on with the driver, he could contend in the U.S. Open. But that's the one I would doubt the most.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on the Saturday afternoon Sports Map Radio Network. You are listening to the Big E Sports Show, and we are going one-on-one with our regular guest, and that is Larry Miller, former PGA Pro. Full recap of the 2022 President's Cup. I definitely wanted you to weigh in and get your thoughts on just Quail Hollow. I mean, they worked very hard since, in fact, 2018 to prepare to host this unique, this very special event. And certainly Quail Hollow, it's been a fixture on the PGA Tour, hosting the Wells Fargo Championship on an annual basis. Larry, as a former pro, I mean, have you played Quail Hollow, and what's your impressions of this course?
Yes, we used to play the Kemper Open in Charlotte there at Quail Hollow, and so I've played it many times, and it's a great golf course, and I think you're going to see more, a couple of majors there in the future. More, maybe cup matches of some sort. I could see the Ryder Cup being there at some point. It's a great golf course, and it's one that I don't think favors, any particular, like the Europeans or anybody, that plays around the world. I don't think it favors anybody. I think it's a very fair golf course, and I think it identifies the best players. And so I look forward. I think it's just a great golf course, always in great condition. And, boy, the people in Charlotte really come out and support events there. I used to play the Kemper Open there, and there were just throngs of people out there. Charlotte, Memphis, Fort Worth, those are the ones with the real big fun galleries. And so that's one of them. But anyway, I think you're going to see more big events there.
Okay, so that's so interesting, because there was a lot of talk leading up to the President's Cup that perhaps this course, when we talk about Quail Hollow, that it provided the United States maybe a little bit of an advantage the way that it is set up. I mean, what say you?
Well, you could make that argument because it's in the United States, and the U.S. players obviously play courses in the United States more, and the others play it, play less. But I'm talking about the general design of the course. I don't think now you can set it up to favor, you can favor a team with certain pin positions and the way that where you put tee markers on holes, the length or the position. Especially though pin positions, you can definitely favor one side or the other. The U.S. players tend to hit it higher, and spin the ball more, and the other players around the world, Europeans included, they tend to hit the ball a little lower because they're used to playing in more wind. and they don't quite spin it as much. So with pin positions, you could favor one team or the other. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't be a big advocate of that. I think that's unfair, and I think everybody should play just a fair golf course.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we are wrapping up our time. Former PGA pro Larry Miller with us at Sports Map Radio Network. Full recap of last weekend's, or I should say last week's President's Cup. What were your thoughts about the LIV golf players that from either of the teams that were not eligible to play? I mean, for the United States, they didn't have Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, and even Patrick Reed on the American side.
Well, they gave it up. You know, they gave it up for the money. And so I think there's a lot of tension involved with the situation. You know, I don't know what's going to happen if LIV goes away or loses popularity with some players and they want to come back. You know, what is the tour going to do? You know, are they going to welcome them back with open arms, or they're going to say, too bad, you made your bed, lie in it? I don't know. A lot of tension there, and a lot of players have resentments for those players, and not good. You know, I've said all along, this is not good for the game. And I don't know. I don't know how it's going to shake out. There's been surprises right down the line. I didn't think it would ever fly to begin with, and it has somewhat.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But what's the longevity of it? You know, that's the thing. One thing about the Saudis running this thing, they could stay as long as they want.
Yeah.
They got the money. And whether or not they maintain interest or get bored with it or whatever, we'll see. But anyway, I don't think it's good for the game, professional game. It's not going to affect a recreational player. But the professional game, it can't be good for it.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see if at perhaps some point that these two tours will find a way to coexist. And we'll just continue that conversation on our program. Larry Miller joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. Check out his website. Good stuff on there. And that is LarryMillerGolf.com. Enjoy these cooler temperatures teeing up, and we'll talk next weekend. Thank you, Larry.
Okay, enjoyed it, and talk to you next week.
That, of course, was Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.